Okay, good afternoon, everyone. Today is Wednesday, May 18th, and we are here at United Orthodox Synagogues in Houston, Texas, for our weekly Lunch and Learn. And this week is Parshat Emor, and we are on page 263 in the JPS Tanakh. We're going to discuss a very interesting episode in the middle of the book of Vayikra, Sefer Vayikra, the book of Leviticus. And it's going to raise a number of questions. So what I'm going to do, let's first do this. Why doesn't everyone read the chapter? Chapter 24. And just if you have a piece of paper and a pen, you could write down any questions that you may have, or you could just remember them. And I'm going to stop the recording so we don't have all this silent time. And then after everyone has a few minutes to read the chapter, we'll come back. All right, we're back. Let's hopefully everyone had a chance to read the chapter. So, anyone want to get the ball rolling? I'm sure you have lots of questions. I don't know if we'll be able to deal with all of them. I'm obviously heading in a certain direction. Anyone have any questions? Anything interesting about this chapter?
How many near tongues do they have?
Where are you?
First puzzle. It says near Tamid, Halok near Tamid, but then in the second verse it says Nichusla Karofet outside the curtain, now you put it along the way.
Yeah,
I'll look from Aaron there and broken.
Yeah, this is the menorah in the Mishkan.
Okay, I got it. Okay.
There's sort of one I think sort of major question incongruity that arises.
The half Israelite and half Egyptian, his mother was an Israelite.
Right.
And yet the Lord tells Moses to have him stoned.
Mm-hmm.
If he were full-blooded Israelite with the same...
very good. Hold on to that question. Okay. You're on the right track in terms of the episode. There's sort of something in this verse where you sort of be along on us in this chapter. You sort of be on a certain track, and all of a sudden you switch gears. What is that? The first nine psukim are verses about the temple, and all of a sudden you stop, and there's this story about this guy who curses God. And then, after that story, there's another collection of verses about what happens if one person hits or kills another person. So you have a chapter here that like in fits and starts, right? And this is the question becomes stronger when you consider what's happened in the previous chapters. In the previous chapter, for example, 23, you have a chapter that deals with the holidays. Whole chapter 23 is a question about a chapter about the various holidays. Chapter 21 and 22 are chapters about the Kohanim, rules specifically related to the Kohanim. And the previous Parsha Kiddushim, as we mentioned last Shabbat, is a collection of lots of different rules. So what we have is a lot of rules, five or six chapters of rules, and all of a sudden, in the middle of the chapter, we get waylaid, right? In the middle of the discussion about the rules, we get waylaid with a narrative, with a story of the blasphemer, of the person who curses God. We're on page 263 and 264. Okay, that's the major question we are going to deal with. So let's just see it for ourselves inside. If we start on page 263, we have God telling Moshe, of how to light the menorah in the Mishkan, and how to bring one of the offerings. You shall take choice flour, verse 5 on page 264. You shall take choice flour and bake of it 12 loaves, place them on the pure table. Right, this is some of the daily stuff that went on in the Mishkan. And all of a sudden, Vayetze ben isha yisraelit v'hu ben ish mitzri v'toch b'nei Yisrael v'yinatzu b'machaneh ben ha-yisraelit v'isha yisraeli. There came out among the Israelites one whose mother was Israelite and whose father was Egyptian, and a fight broke out in the camp between the half Israelite and a certain Israelite. The son of the Israelite woman pronounced the name in blasphemy, and he was brought to Moshe. Now his mother's name was Shlomit, daughter of Divri, Shlomit bat Divri, of the tribe of Dan, and he was placed in custody until the decision of the Lord should be made clear to them. And then God said, bring him out to the camp. Everyone has to put their hands on him, and then stone him to death. Okay? So this is that story in itself is strange. What's strange about that story? First of all, why do we care that he was a half Egyptian, half Israelite?
Pretty specific with right? The name of his mother and
right. And why do we care that the person he was fighting was a full Israelite?
What?
That's exactly the question, right? Why do we care? And what's and again, what's it doing in the middle of this section?
Now wait a minute. When somebody has a Jewish mother, he's not called half Jewish. He is Jewish. His mother was Israeli.
We didn't say he's half Jewish.
It says it. They call him the half Jew.
They call him the half Israelite.
The half Israelite, which is the same thing, isn't it?
No. You're a full Jew and a half Israelite. That's exactly the thing. You're a full Jew, but you're only half Israelite because only one of your parents is Israelite.
Wouldn't that mean the Jews?
No. I think if you want to be specific, I mean it's a good point, but I think here the Torah is being specific that the person was not full Israelite; he was only half Israelite.
He can't be half.
Okay, so you guys could have this discussion on your own later. We're going to continue. Okay, so that's one question. What is this narrative story doing in the middle of these verses? And so let's jump right in. All right, let's jump right into try to get some of the answers to these questions and raise some other questions as we go along. So first of all, it seems that the main issue that we seem to be bothered by, that the commentators are bothered by, is that this person, again, was the son of an Israelite woman and an Egyptian father. Okay? So let's look at what happens next. Look at verse 17. Verse 17. Yeah, sure.
Israelite curse somebody or because his mom's name is Shlomi.
Right.
To make Shalom.
Uh-huh.
And why
okay.
Is this
all interesting? Yeah, good. That's interesting. Let's look at verse 17. Okay, because there's another question. What's this material doing here? Right? We have ritual material from the temple. Then we have this sort of fight breaks out in the middle of the camp. And then we have a separate set of laws dealing with damages. That actually may help us understand what's going on. Meaning, these people are arguing. It's not clear what they are arguing about, but what may have happened, what did happen in this argument? Before that. They were fighting. It was a fight. Maybe it's unclear whether it was a physical fight or not, but I think verse 17 may indicate to us that it was a physical fight. That helps us explain why verse 17 is there to begin with, right? Forget about what this. We haven't answered our first question. What this whole story is doing, interrupting the ritual laws. But we could answer our second question first. Why after the fight? Do we have these laws of what happens when one person hits another person? Well, that must have been what happened in this story. They started arguing about whatever it is they were arguing about. Who knows? The Talmud talks about maybe trying to understand what they were arguing about, but that's not so important. They were arguing, right? They were arguing about something, and that argument turned physical maybe, and now so the Torah is telling you, aha, while I'm on the subject of a physical fight, here are the rules. Here are the rules. The ish ki akek kol nefesh adam mot yumat. Umaken nefesh. And then once it starts telling you about what happens when you hit a person, right? Then it gives you about the animal laws, etc. Then it's a little bit of stream of consciousness. But at first, it tells you this is what happens when one person would hit another person and kill them in the midst of the argument. So that could be that could help us understand what's happening at the end of the chapter. Okay, because why? At the very end of the chapter, what happens? Verse 23. That's the end of the story. They actually do stone him. They actually kill the blasphemer. So you have the story of the blasphemy. Then you have, by the way, here are some of the rules that may have applied to this argument because they were fighting. And then the end of the story, that they actually kill the blasphemer. Okay?
Did they kill him because he was a blasphemer or because he was
They killed him because he was a blasphemer. In fact, we could address this issue of the half Israelite. Let's look at verse 15 and 16. Veil b'nei Yisrael tedaber l'emor, and the Lord spoke and to the Israelite people speak thus. This is God telling Moshe. Ish ish ki kalel elokav v'nasa cheto. Anyone who blasphemes his God shall bear his guilt. V'nokev shem Hashem mot yumat. If he also pronounces the name of the Lord, he shall be put to death. The whole community shall stone him. Stranger or citizen, if he has thus pronounced the name, he ger kager kager keezrach kager kaz. So what's it telling us? It's telling us that Ron is telling us the answer to your question. That's the point. That they may have not been sure, meaning. Why didn't they kill this guy right away instead of taking him? Why'd they take him and put him in jail and have to ask, what are we supposed to do with this guy? Because they weren't sure. Because his mother was an Israelite and his father was an Egyptian, they weren't sure if all the rules applied to him. So God says, okay, now let me clarify this. Doesn't make a difference who blasphemes me. Off with his head, so to speak, right? He's a goner, right? So that explains why they didn't kill him right away, because they were unclear. So the Torah now clarifies, it doesn't make a difference who it is, they have to kill him. What we still have not answered is why this guy blasphemed God, what was he so upset about, nor have we answered what this section is doing in the middle of ritual section. So let's first deal with the question of what may have been what brought this person to blasphemy God. And here, anyone want to take a stab at this? Meaning, he's in a fight. He's arguing, right? They're arguing. Two people are arguing. I understand if it may come to physical blows, which helps us understand verse 18. But why would the guy curse God? Why would he
use the name of God in a curse? On the other hand,
that's different than cursing God.
Why does it mean?
Well, I'll tell you, the Milgram suggests it's probably something as straightforward as this. May God be damned. Okay?
But we don't see.
We do. We don't know what he said, but we know he blasphemed God. Didn't use God's name in a curse. Blasphemy means to curse God. It's that's what blasphemy means. If we read it, it says... Vayikov ben ha'isha yisroel et Hashem. The son of the women pronounced the name in blasphemy. That's what it means. Okay? He blasphemed God. Why? Why would it come to that in a fight between two people? They're arguing about money. They're arguing about some ritual thing according to the Talmud.
He's using his Egyptian side against them. Maybe.
What do you mean?
He said something. That he was an Egyptian or a half Egyptian.
So he would have said, he would have cursed the guy out. Why is he cursing God? What does God have to do with this? This is not just like someone.
God brought him to that position.
Brought who to what position?
The half Egyptian. He could have been in Egypt and still lording it over everyone.
Okay, I think you're on to something. And Rabbi Avnon Bazak says the same, something very similar.
Explain.
But why curse God? If you feel estranged, curse the people who make you feel estranged. Right? If you feel estranged, curse, say, you're a jerk.
Yeah, but
or you should go to because you. But why? What does God have to do with it?
Blaming the rules of being a Jew, and he must have said something to him. He says, "You're not really a whole Jew." And he says, "God
maybe.
Damn it!"
So Amnon Bazak says something. Amnon Bazak says something very interesting, and I think similarities between this text and other texts bear it out. Amnon Bazak says something very interesting. He's a teacher in Yeshiva Har Etzion. He says this: the utterance seems to have emerged specifically because of the blasphemer's problematic parentage. Meaning, the Torah goes out of its way to tell us that this guy was a half Israelite and half Jew, right? Half Israelite, half Egyptian, right? Again, why is that information important? Well, it's obviously important because that's why he curses God. The fact that he was the son of an Egyptian man, attention should be paid to the fact that the Torah does not identify the two quarreling men by name. It only tells us the name of the mother, right? The only name that is mentioned is that of the woman who gave birth to a son fathered by an Egyptian man. The price for this deed is paid by her son, who it would appear harbored a certain alienation towards the nation that had caused his father's people to suffer such terrible punishments. In a moment of fury, his frustration exploded with such force that he cursed in God's name. Okay? That's really a very fascinating read.
He cursed in God's name.
He cursed in God's name or cursed God's name. Now, that's a very interesting read of what's going on, meaning that's why we're told who he was. Because now we have to understand why he would curse God. He would curse God or curse in God's name, right? Because of this disconnect, this alienation, or this sense of anger that he feels for all the pain that you people caused my father's people back in Egypt. Now, there's a fascinating, I think, parallel between the language, okay? Let's look first on page 264. Verse 10. Vayetze ben isha yisraelit vuhu ben ish mitri betoch b'nei Yisrael v'yinatsu b'machaneh ben ha-yisraelit v'isha yisraelit. That word vayetze. Keep that word in mind. And now let's flip all the way back to the book of Shemot when Moshe first leaves the palace. I'll tell you in a second. Okay. Go to page 115. Shemot 2, verse 11. I do not think this stuff is not a coincidence. Look what happens. Vayetze elechav. Okay, verse 11, page 115. Vayihi b'mahim vayigdal Moshe. Sometime after that, when Moshe had grown up, and he went out. Vayetze elechav. Now, what did he see? Vayar ish mitzri. He sees an Egyptian man. Go back to our verse. Vayetze ben isha yisraelit v'hu ben ish mitzri. These are not coincidences, right? This is the Torah using identical words, and we're supposed to know the Torah well enough to say, "Wait a second, these words in such close proximity sound familiar to me, right? What's going on?" And I think that's exactly what's going on. What does Moshe do here? What does Moshe do? He kills an Egyptian, which is the beginning. This is the beginning of the end of the Egyptians. This is when things begin to unravel for the Egyptians. The Torah is connecting the two stories and telling us that's why this Egyptian guy was upset. He was upset because of what happened to his father's people. And we're supposed to connect that to the beginning of the end, which uses the very, very same. And not only that, it's two people fighting in both stories. In one story, it happens to be two Egyptians. Here, it's one and a half Egyptians. Right? But it's because he's half Israelite. So it's two people fighting. We have
no,
by
it's one and a, it's an Israeli and a half an Israeli.
Right. It's yeah. But it's still two people fighting, right? Vayetse and Ish Mitzri, and he's called, right? Vehu ben Ish Mitzri betoch b'nei Yisrael. Okay, so I think that this comparison bears out, this similarity in language bears out what Bazak, what Amnon Bazak is saying. Yeah.
Also, this is the point the word basically went out, which Moshe declares, I'm not an Egyptian. I'm an Israeli. And it says...
Right, correct.
And so in some way, if you have the same word, because it's going out from the Egyptian people, this guy is basically declaring I'm not...
Very interesting. Moshe, in the first story, sort of pledges his allegiance, indicates his allegiance to the Jewish people, and this guy is indicating his allegiance maybe to the Egyptians.
Right.
It's the opposite.
Right.
Interesting.
He's going out from the
Egyptians. If in fact, he's still so upset about what his father's people... had to endure. Yeah, that's very good. That's very good.
Is there any distinction?
Like the full Israelite to him?
No, we don't. We don't. We don't know that. Correct.
Is there a distinction? The earlier verse talks about Egyptian and Hebrew, and then we're talking about Egyptian and Israelite in the later verse.
Oh, that's very interesting. Yeah, because I think that's what we're trying to say. I think they're trying to say.
So they've.
Ish Ivri. Is a Hebrew. I think he's maybe that's the difference. The difference is a total, you're a total Jew, you're an Ivri.
Transformation.
Here, right.
Right.
Yes. Very good. Okay. So we still have not answered our first question, which is what is this narrative story doing in the middle of all this ritual stuff? Right? It seems to be disconnected. So anyone want to take a stab at that? What do you mean? In verse, we're now back in chapter 24. We have ritual about lighting the candelabra in the temple and the special bread that had to be made. And all of a sudden, it's interrupted by this verse, by these section of this narrative, this story. No, look at verse 10. Verse 10 through 16 is an interruption. So the question is, what's it doing there? Why is it coming right after the ritual? That's afterwards. That's 17. No, that's afterwards. One second. Afterwards. Yes, that's afterwards. I'm talking about before. Beforehand, it's talking about the oil and the bread, and then we have the fight. That's the question. Why is there an interruption? Just finish the laws. Finish the laws and then tell us the story. Or tell us the story, then give us the laws. Why? Right, so there must be some connection. The commentaries are suggesting that there's a thematic connection between this story of blasphemy and the laws that came before it and the rest of the laws that come after it. So the Ralbag has a very interesting take. He answers two questions. Okay, he first says as follows. V'hine samach lazeh inyan ha-mikalel. All of the rules that we've just had before him were juxtaposed to the story of the blasphemer. L'ha'ir she'elu ha-mitzvot asher niskeru bazeh ha-makom al ha-hemshech miyashirot ha-adam la-hasagato yit'aleh. All of the laws that came before the story of the blasphemer were ways for us to get close to God. The holidays, the Kohanim, the lighting the candelabra, these are all ways, whether you're a Kohen or a Jew, to develop a relationship with God. Asher hu siba sheyireh mimenu v'yahavehu v'yichabdehu. So these would bring one to awe, and to love, and to honor God. B'tachlit ma she'efshar, as the best you can. Then it makes sense to have the story explain what's the punishment when you do the opposite, right? Here's all these rules you're supposed to do that bring you to honor, and to love, and to fear God. And here's what happens when you do the opposite, which is curse God. Right? When you curse God. So the story is not just stuck in there. The story there is to illustrate, right, in a very, very vivid way what happens when all the stuff that was supposed to occur didn't work out, and you end up cursing God. Ha'onesh ha'yoter nifla v'hu skila, the most severe type of death, which is stoning. So there is a thematic connect. There are two opposite sides of the same coin. You can have a positive relationship with God, and you have the Chagim, and the Beit HaMikdash, and the special laws of the Kohanim, and which brings you to love, and awe, and fear, and respect. Or you could have the negative, the cursing God, and this is what's going to, this is what's going to happen. And then he goes on. He answers the second question again, differently. The second question was, okay, now I understand why I have the blasphemy laws. Why do I, right after that, have the laws of what happens if you hit a person? Okay, so one answer is that that may have been what happened in this fight. One of them may have hit the other one. But that's one answer. The Ralbag has a different answer. Because who's supposed to kill the blasphemer?
People,
the witnesses. Kadeshi is Shamru Haidim Mehait Sheker Bazeh. It's warning you. If you're going to bring testimony against a blasphemer, you better be right. Because if you're wrong, then what are you simply?
Murderer.
You're a murderer. You're a murderer. What happens if you're a murderer? You're going to get the same thing that you tried to bring on the blasphemer. Right, so the makeh ish is just saying this is careful. If you stone the murderer properly, great. But if you don't, then what are you simply? You're a makeh nefesh. You're just a murderer, right? Kadeshi is shamru ha'idim mehait sheker bazeh kimoshe it parsei meinyan. Okay, it goes on. Lazeh. Then it tells you also what happens if you kill an animal. Well, if you kill an animal, it's bad, but it's not as bad as if you kill a human being. Because when you kill an animal, it's only a financial penalty and not a capital crime. As opposed to a person, it's capital. This is to also teach us about the high stature of a human being. And then, once it's already talking about injuring people mortally, it also dials it down a notch and says, what's the punishment if you injure someone, but you end up killing them? Lashlamat habiyur bazenyan, to give us the full picture. Also teaches us that sometimes anger brings us to curse God. It's interesting. The juxtaposition is even stronger. Imagine the heights you could reach when you serve in the Beit HaMikdash or you have the proper celebration of the holidays. But as soon as you curse God, all of those great heights that you may have reached are worthless. Done. Yeah.
Nowhere, the way I read it, does it say he killed the other guy. There was a fight. But it doesn't say he killed
No. The witnesses killed the blasphemer.
I know. But when the half-Israeli was fighting with the other guy and he blasphemed God, it doesn't say he killed the other guy, so
correct.
He shouldn't be put to death.
No, the blasphemer is put to death.
Oh, the blasphemer.
That's what we're saying.
For blasphemy.
The blasphemer is put to death for blasphemy. And the Torah is saying, be careful, because when you come and you testify against the guy who's going to be blasphemed, first of all, you have to put him to death. And if you do, based on your old false testimony, then you're not doing God's will. Then you're just a makan nefesh. Then you're just a criminal.
And that would also seemingly explain why after that whole little tangent.
Right.
But it says at the end that last pasuk.
Come back to the story.
But it says if anyone kills a human being, he shall be put to death. Nowhere did it say that.
Because it's telling us if you bring testimony against a blasphemer and kill him, and your testimony is false, then you're just a murderer. So it's telling you, be careful about the testimony you give. Because the testimony that you give is going to be the definition between whether you are doing God's will or whether you are simply a makan nefesh, just a murderer.
Yeah.
right? So if you put this all together, now we could see. We have sections and sections of rules telling us about the great heights we can reach if you serve Hashem. Then we have a story that reminds us about what happens if you do the opposite of coming close to Hashem. You distance yourself from Hashem by cursing him. And then we have a warning. Don't be so overzealous to get the guy who blasphemes God, because if you're overzealous and you're not really careful, then you're just a criminal. We're going to kill you. And then as Daniel mentioned at the end of the story, we have, now notwithstanding all that, kill this guy, because this guy really is a blasphemer. And again, why did he blaspheme God? That's sort of a parenthetical point. Likely, according to Amnon Bazak in our analysis, because he still harbors resentment against what the Jewish people and the Jewish God did to his father's people, and the similarity of the language, Vayetze, Ish, Mitzri, and the choice that Moshe made to choose sides, and the choice that this guy to make to choose sides, indicate that that's what was going on. And so hopefully all of our questions are answered.
So
yeah. No, it's not us. It's God. It's not us. And you need two witnesses. And be careful. Don't be too quick, because otherwise you're just a common criminal. Yeah.
There's another thing I just want to finish the point I made before. After Moshe runs away, and he drives away the shepherds,
yeah,
the daughters go back to their father.
When they say Ish Mitzri,
and
right? Ish
Mitzri, an Egyptian right. helped us. Right. So he looked like he was an Egyptian. He obviously right. talked like an Egyptian and everything. But underneath, he wasn't at all.
And so although the rabbis, go ahead, I'll tell you what the rabbis do with that.
And this guy, obviously, was with the Hebrews. He went out with them and all that, but underneath, he wasn't.
Right, that's very interesting. Right, that's a very interesting way to look at it. Although the rabbis see it differently. The rabbis say that's why Moshe did not get to Israel. Because when the daughter said to Dad, Dad, this Egyptian saved us, he didn't say, hold on, I'm not an Egyptian, I'm a Hebrew.
Oh, he wasn't there.
What do you mean he wasn't there?
They brought him to the house.
They say, see this guy, this Egyptian guy, he saved us. And Moshe didn't say, no, no, no.
Well, he didn't know what they said to him.
He's standing right there. The way this.
They went home. But then he says to them, go back and get him. What do you mean?
Let's go back and look. Let's go back and look. It says, let's look. But shepherds came and drove them off. Moses rose to their defense. And he watered the flock. When they returned to their father, Will, he said, how is it that you have come back? They answered, an Egyptian rescued us from the shepherds. He even drew. Where is he then? Why did you leave the man? Ask him to break bread. Moses consented to stay with them. So it's unclear because...
Well, he wasn't there when they said
it. It's unclear because it doesn't say they...
Where is he?
Right. Maybe he was... Maybe... I don't know. But it doesn't say they went to get him. But that's a good question. Although the rabbis seem to think he was there. Because the rabbis say that's the reason why... So that's what's going on in these. That's a good question, though. But that's what's going on in this section, which at first glance seems to be very incongruous and just a mush of topics. Now they all seem to be at least conceptually and thematically connected.
I just want to ask one historical question.
Yeah.
Was there ever a case, once the Jews got to Israel, where a person was put to death for blasphemy?
I don't know if we have records of these things, but...
capital punishment for murder was almost...
Was very... By the way, there's something which we didn't get to, but there is another story which is sort of like this story, which Amnon Bazak points out some similarities to, but also some differences. This is not the only time... there was an event that happened and the Jews weren't sure what to do with the person. If you remember, the gatherer of stones. If you let's quickly look at it, if we look in Bamidbar, we're not going to go through the whole thing, but we quickly look at Numbers chapter 15. Number 15, it says... it's later, page 319. Once when the Israelites were in the wilderness, they came upon a man gathering wood on the Sabbath day. Those who found him as he was gathering wood, brought him before Moses, Aaron, and the whole community. So here, Amnon Bazak notes that in the case of our blasphemer, they just bring him to Moses. In this case, they bring him to Moses and Aaron. In this case, he's a full Israelite. In our case, he's chatzi chatzi. He's half and half. He goes through some of the differences, but it's not, again, it's not the, he makes a big point, Bazak, of talking about the difference as to why they brought him in this case to Moshe. I'll just read you that one. Just one. In both cases, the sinner is brought to. In each of the stories, it describes a different sin. But in both cases, when the sinner is brought to Moshe, he's placed in custody. What's the difference? The most important and most obvious difference is that the story of the blasphemer includes a list of laws that Moshe is commanded to transmit afterwards, right? And this one doesn't. And also the difference between bringing him to Moshe. Here, the third difference. They brought him to Moshe, whereas the wood gatherer is brought from Moshe, Aaron, and all the congregation. You propose that bringing the blasphemer specifically to Moshe alone suggests a special reason to discuss this incident. And what's that special reason? The connection between what we talked about in Shemot and what we talked about here, the language that is similar. But there are some other things to discuss in this. Maybe we'll do that another time. Okay, everyone, have a wonderful day.
Thank you.